You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello there. This is Leah Eden for heritageradionetwork.org. I'm in the studio today with Barbara Bosch, the director of Food Acts, who's also a professor of theater at Hunter College, as well as Mark Ringer, who is an actor in Food Acts, who's also a professor of theater. So we've got lots of wonderful minds here with us today. Thank you both so much for coming into the studio. We're excited to hear a little bit about a new performance that's going to be taking place in Manhattan called Food Acts. It is a new play that's going to be running from February 6th through February 24th at the Lion Theater at Theater Row on West 42nd Street. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. I want to dive right on in. Food Acts has been billed as a culinary stage adventure, which I find that fantastic. I really love it. Barbara, tell us a little bit about the performance, the play. What can an audience expect to see and hear and feel when they come to see it?
I think it's a perfect theater piece for anyone that loves food. Loves talking about food, loves eating food, loves theater, loves literature, language. It's a piece that encompasses some of the greatest writers in the world and their take on moments in people's relationships that embrace food, or a family sitting down together, or a person eating a meal individually. And so we have everybody from Charles Dickens to Homer to Proust, Langston Hughes, Chaucer, Dante. I mean, we have some fabulous things in the piece, but it all revolves around the individual and the group's kind of communion with food, or how food becomes a way to embrace each other. And it's a wonderful piece, and it's a lot of fun. And there are some moving moments as well, but it's very, very fun.
Oh, wonderful. So what was the trigger for this play? Kind of where did the initial concept come from?
Well, part of it is the world that we live in now is so interested and excited by food and food preparation and the advent of celebrity chefs and cooking shows and cooking competitions and things like that. And that's something I find very fun. But more importantly, over the years, I have read lots of wonderful books that have things about food and meals. And I just started noticing that I really gravitated to those things and really enjoyed those. And then I started reading more books about the cooking. Not that I'm a great cook or anything, but reading more books about food preparation and meals and things like that. Like, I love MFK Fisher's writings, and I started reading a ton of her stuff, and I just started reading other things, and the more I read, the more I started noticing stuff like that. And I just thought this could be really fun. I'm the artistic director of a theater company called Jeu de Mot, or translated as Wordplay. And the whole idea of the company Wordplay is to embrace and use pieces of literature, non-theatrical text, as theater. Whether it's something from a novel or a newspaper article or a short story or a piece of poetry, any non-theatrical text can be fair game. And so I had done a piece called The Hamlet Project, The Art of the Mystery, The Hamlet Project, which used a very condensed version of Shakespeare's Hamlet and then wove in and out of it information and literature that was commenting on the play. So it could be George Bernard Shaw's comment or Freud's comment or somebody articulating something about the play, and we wove it together and we performed that a few years ago. And Angie DeMott is very interested, and there's a company, a wonderful company of actors and designers involved with this. And the whole goal is to kind of bring to the theater public pieces of literature or ideas about theater or ideas about the world that are not inherently theater, but can become very theatrical. And Mark has been in, played Polonius in that, and he's also in the current production of Food Acts.
Oh, very fun. So what is it like to be, you know, to be an actor in a performance like this? You know, I love that idea of kind of bringing in a variety of texts to kind of speak to a similar, you know, to a same subject. What is that like to be, you know, an actor speaking in a variety of different voices from different authors or literary characters?
Well, it's kind of like creating a theatrical collage, and you have elements that were originally from different sources, and yet, of course, they've got to coalesce into a theatrical unity, of course, the beginning and a middle and an end. And part of the challenge has been in not finding material. There's a lot of material, but in sculpting the pieces that we think are the most telling, and then finding resonances between, you know, things you think are very desperate, like pieces about a crazy Cockney waiter stealing food in a Charles Dickens novel, to Count Ugolino and Dante, you know, who has cannibalized his own children when he was locked up in a tower. So it's, you want a real gambit of a variety of roles that are very, very exciting, and it's fun to go from the one to the other, because they each one have to be lived, of course, very intensely in their very different ways. And as a theater professor at Marymount Manhattan College and an expert on the Greeks, I insisted when this project was starting out that we had to include the very end of, nearly the end of Homer's Iliad, which has the climax is two people deciding to sit down to eat. You know, Priam of Troy and Achilles of the Greeks, who has killed Priam's son, and the symbol of their sharing food resolves the tragedy, if you will, of the epic, the Iliad, and it also is one of the most beautiful assertions of our common humanity. And I think that's one of the things that's at the root of so much that's in food play, is that Food Acts.
Thank you. I'm glad it wasn't me who made that mistake.
Oh boy, Food Acts. One of the things about Food Acts is the food is it's never about the food, as one character says. It's food is always sublimated or symbolic of so much beyond just what the material that keeps us alive, of course.
Right. And it must have been fascinating to go back and see how food was being talked about or used throughout history. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's, absolutely, you know, it's not just modern, it's not just, you know, far, far, far back. But were there certain, as you were going through all this and putting the piece together, were there certain themes around food that you saw come through, you know, regardless of time frame or time period?
Well, there are things like the memories that are built around meals. For example, in Proust, he talks about the bite of the madeleine and dipped in tea.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, and the memory of that opens up the whole world and time for him. Just the taste. There are wonderful moments, for example, in the Virginia Woolf novel, To the Lighthouse, where there's this dinner that that Mrs. Ramsay has prepared, and they're all sitting around there. And there's some kind of sense that the world is going to change, but yet they have this meal and everybody's together. And then the way that novel works is then it goes much, much later in time, and you find out that Mrs. Ramsay has passed away, that two of the children have died in various ways, that the world has shifted, but yet they all have this wonderful memory of that moment and that meal. And so the act of memory in the meal, the act of how sometimes you can really start to see each other more clearly when you're sitting there with each other, breaking bread together. There's a moment in the Theodore Dreiser novel Sister Carrie where this man and woman connect with each other because he notices that she's in trouble and that she needs a good hot meal, and he brings her into a restaurant, and she starts to look at the world and think, oh, what it would be like to be able to do this, to go into a restaurant. And they start to form a relationship based over having this meal together. And there are points in the whole piece where it's about the fun that happens at the table and also the kind of sense of community mm-hmm. and the sense of connection that happens over the table. And also what's woven throughout the piece are these wonderful one-liners that are very funny, that are kind of almost... I'd almost like to suggest they're like palate cleansers between pieces. There's like little little tastes of something else between pieces. And you've got what are some of the ones you've got
that W.C. Fields.
Oh yeah, do the W.C. Fields one. Do you remember it?
Now that you've asked me, we'll see whether I remember it.
You've got a couple days to remember it.
Once during Prohibition, I was forced for several days to live on nothing but food and water.
W.C. Fields.
W.C. Fields.
Yes. What's the Orson Welles one? That's a funny one.
My doctor told me to stop having intimate dinners for four unless there were three other people. Orson Welles.
Yes.
Love.
That's
little
good.
Beaumont.
Yeah. Because I'm the director, I don't remember any of the lines, but I'm glad I have an actor here that can remember some of them.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
but there's some
so
wonderful, they're just wonderful little things in there. Some are very, very fun, and some are very moving, like the Iliad moment is very moving. And then there's this really neat letter that I found of a Civil War soldier. It was in a collection at University of Vermont, I think. A Civil War soldier writing home to his mom, talking about that he just got the most recent box and it had the butter in it and the crab apple jam in it, and that the meal that he was able to make for himself because now he had these things. And it's just very a sense of that the mother was showing the love for the son by sending food that she knew he would like. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the letter he says something like, I hope to be home soon, and I'll get to take care of you. Now, in reality, from doing some more reading, I found out that he died about a month later, that soldier. So, but we still have that letter, and we see how the food and him trying to reassure his mom he's okay by saying that he's eating a good meal and that he appreciates the food and all that. It's just it's very lovely.
That is really lovely. I like that. And it's interesting hearing you talk. It has kind of a historian feel to it. You talk about finding this letter, and mm-hmm. you mentioned that you spent a number of years researching. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that process. Kind of, did you have a sense of what you wanted to find? Was it very explorative? You know, what was that research process, or how did you find these pieces that worked well?
Well, basically, I went started with a bunch of books stacked by the side of my bed, and because I had just been reading a bunch of M.F.K. Fisher. And so I found a piece in there that I really liked. And I just started, one thing led to another. And then, you know, nowadays it's so, there's so many fabulous books about food writing that have already indexed a lot of stuff. So I've started getting tons of books on, you know, via the internet and finding other books. And actually I had the luxury of first workshopping this piece with a group of students at Hunter College, which was actually a really fun process because I brought in a script that was probably 4 hours long that I had put together, and we read it through, and I think there were 11 students and myself, and we sat around a table, and the first week or two of rehearsal, we just sat around a table, read stuff, talked about stuff, discarded stuff. There were things we liked but were just too long. There were things that we liked that just were more fun to hear but were not really stageable. Mm-hmm. And so we went through and really spent a couple of weeks just paring it down. And then after we pared it down, we still had way too much material. So anyway, we did that, and I did a workshop production of this under a title called Food Play. That's why there's a sometimes we forget about this. But it's now called Food Acts. And this new version of the script is using professional actors, and it is maybe about half of the material from that earlier version. And then I found a bunch of new stuff over the last... This was about 2 years ago that I workshopped it. And then in the last 6 months, I've been really focusing on getting the script, redoing the script. And I found a lot of neat stuff that just recently, in the last few months. And actually, as of yesterday in rehearsal, we still were, you know, tinkering with it a bit. And we'll cut a line here and there. We'll move a piece of text. I'm lucky that I'm working with a wonderful dramaturg, Mark Bly, who has a very good ear and has been helping me trim and paste and, you know, just moving some of the one-liners, those palate cleansers I was telling you about, around and just helping me find the kind of resonance of one text juxtaposed with another text. Because in my head, it makes perfect sense. But then when you put it out there and other people have to hear it, they may not have that frame of reference or those connections. So it's been very good working with a dramaturg and with other actors. And what's been great is the other actors have been fabulous about helping me too.
Mm-hmm. Working with Mark Bly really reminds me what a dramaturg is, which they often say. People often ask, what is a dramaturg? And people have many definitions, but the most common one is play doctor. And he really is a play doctor in the best sense. If he finds the, you know, you may have various bits of dramatic tissue, and he is able to find where these pieces of tissue fit together the best and feed each other, if you will. Carry forth that metaphor a little more.
As we should. There's no question about that. So when thinking about, you know, how I think about or experience food, you know, taste is one of the most obvious senses that I use. Smell, those kinds of things. And I'm wondering, as a director and as an actor in this performance, what is it like to try to get across a message around food or talk to the audience around food without having those senses available to you?
I know. I wish we could have smell-o-rama or something or scratch and sniff stuff for the show. Because
I would enjoy that.
Wouldn't that be fun? Well, you know, it's more about, for example, I was working on a piece the other day where the actor talks about that she tastes this thing and she'd never tasted anything more wonderful than this. But she was kind of racing through it. And so I was working with her, but now really taste it. Just take the time to really have that kind of sense of what does that taste like? What does that do for you? What does that make you feel like? And then in that moment, you know, we will believe that. We will believe that you're really experiencing something. And then so then the audience gets to live through that with you and experience it with you. I do wish we could just have an open kitchen and just serve everything as we're talking about it, as we're making it. We could serve the bouffe en daube and the madeleines and all the different things. Oh, one kind of... fun thing is that I'm using as part of the pre-show music and in a couple of little transitions some actual recipes. So it's so the recipes themselves are being spoken as a kind of as almost like music. So I mean, so there are lots of different ways that the recipes are being used in there. And it should be fun. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I think the audience is going to come away hungry, and they're going to go immediately to a restaurant in the neighborhood. So maybe start scouting out now restaurants around West 42nd Street, because I do think if they're not hungry when they get there, they will be hungry when they're done. I mean, it's so
great.
Funny because the whole cast, sometimes we'll be doing double rehearsals days and evenings, and we all go out to dinner in between the day rehearsal and the evening rehearsal, and it's been very fun because then it's a time when we talk. I mean, a couple of these actors I've worked with for 15 years, and I'm learning new things about them from just sitting together talking about stuff. There's one actress in the piece who I know very well, but she was mentioning something about growing up on a farm and the animals on the farm and all that. And I didn't know that about her until we were sitting there having a meal together. So it's just fun. It's been very fun on so many different levels because, yeah, we, and I also, one thing I usually don't do in a rehearsal hall is have snacks. For this show, I have snacks. So I've got a, you know, bag of pretzels. Somebody brought in cookies yesterday. I think everybody's going to be, is eating a lot during this show. So yes, it the show's only an hour and a half. There's no intermission. So, you know, you can book your reservations for a late dinner around 9:45 and be there. So
Oh, perfect. That seems like a great piece of advice.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, again, this is Leah Eden with HeritageRadioNetwork.org, and I'm speaking with Barbara Bosch as well as Mark Ringer from Food Acts. You can get more information about the play, the schedule, ticketing, all sorts of fun things on their website at www.foodacts.com. And we are going to take just a very quick break, and we'll be back to hear a little bit more about this delicious play.
The music you're listening to is Awake by Jerome LOL on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back. Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org today.
Great. This is Leah Eden again. We are back talking about Food Acts. And you were just talking a little bit about making sure that the audience has dinner reservations, which I think is important.
That's always important.
I agree.
A friend of mine said that we should say, come hungry, !! or something, because you will be hungry when the show's over, I promise.
Well, I hate people who are not serious about meals. It is so shallow of them, Oscar Wilde.
The
importance of being earnest.
That's fun. Well, so that brings up one of the things I wanted to ask both of you. You've talked a little bit about food as a uniter, something that brings people together. What are some of your personal food memories, either great meals that have brought people together or just kind of special food memories for yourselves personally?
Well, I think you always remember your meals with your family, if you had, particularly if you had a happy family life, and I'm sure, especially if you had an unhappy family life, and that those experiences, you know, the idea of taste and smell, as Proust tells us, can trigger and bring back these long dead memories that can be really quite emotionally shattering, and that very often it's while we're eating, around the dinner table, that intense personal transitions and take place. Relationships are forged. Food is one of the things, obviously, that unites us all, as Homer reminds us. But also, food, what we eat, can divide us. We think about traditions of eating are very specific to certain parts of the world. There are certain things you just don't eat in some areas that are quite natural to eat in others. You might eat a rat in China, or a dog in some place in the world, and that'd be quite natural in that within that culture, and quite forbidden somewhere else. That, of course, in the Dante piece is about transgression of cannibalism, which, you know, to Dante in the medieval vision is tantamount to treason and betrayal, which is what he uses it as a metaphor in the character of Count Ugolino, who's busily cannibalizing another soul in hell because of what had happened to him during his lifetime.
Don't worry, there's only one moment of cannibalization
moment
in the show. This is one.
It's long before the dinner time emerges.
Don't worry.
You can cleanse that out of your mind.
Yes.
Very quickly.
Let's not think about that.
Yeah.
No, and in answer to your question, one of the things I was thinking about is, you know, obviously family. When you're sitting there with family, and for those of us that have lost family, just the memories of being with the parents, being with the brothers and sisters, being there, and that sense of home and that sense of belonging and that sense of there's something special that happens around the dinner table. Mm-hmm. But I was just thinking, when you said that, the first thing that flashed into my mind are those wonderful, sublime meals that one has when one is traveling, and the people you meet and the adventures that happen when you're seeking out a special restaurant to go to, or you're meeting friends in a foreign country and somebody new, and you're invited to their home to eat, and just the kind of I think of sublime evenings I've had on a balcony where you see the Acropolis in the distance. Or a place I went to in Japan where after you had the meal, then you were put into a little tatami room where you could take naps. And then they would wake you up and send you back on the boat back into town. This is in northern Japan. Or the places where you're on a train and somebody offers you a half a sandwich, or, you know, you give them a piece of fruit and they give you something. And even though you don't speak language, you don't share language, you share food and you share a kind of connection. I remember years ago, before the wall fell, taking a train into Budapest. And I hadn't even thought about buying anything to eat on the train. And I was sitting there, and this woman brought out her food. And I was naively thinking, oh, you could buy something on the train, but not in at that point in time. And I remember she insisted on giving me something. I think it was a piece of fruit that she had. And we were kind of talking, but I knew no Hungarian, and she knew no English. But I just remember her in that moment of sharing that was special, obviously, about traveling, but it's also special about the sharing of food. Breaking bread together is such a lovely thing.
Right. And it's interesting because food, you know, the breaking of bread is such a universal characteristic. And you talk about kind of the global element of food. And I'm wondering, when you think about food acts as a performance piece, do you think it's something that could be translated to, you know, Japan or another country, or is there kind of an American-ness
easily?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there are some American writers represented, but there are some writers from all over the world represented, and I think the humanity of the piece and the humanity of the whole thing of sitting down at a table together transcends a specific culture, because I think every culture has those moments, and some of the things in the show are really very funny, where, you know, one piece, a guy is eating in China and his options are rat, either simmered or fried or sauteed, but it's rat is the only option. And other places where somebody's having a meal and they're alone in a hotel, you know, in Pittsburgh, having a meal. And there's, you know, I have several pieces that are solitary eaters in there. So some of it are family meals, some of them are solitary meals, some of them are potential lovers' meals, some of them are meals where the only thing that really connects the people together is the idea of the enjoyment of the food or the extravagance of the food or something like that.
Okay. Well, before we run out of time, I did want to ask you to talk a little bit about, you know, you mentioned how today in our current culture there is this plethora of food shows and celebrity chefs and, you know, food films and this great conversation that we're having that's happening in public. And I'm just sort of wondering, in your minds, what's that relationship between food and cooking and performance? You know, I'm thinking about how so many of the restaurants that I've been to recently have, you know, an open kitchen, and you see the performance, so you see what's happening back there for good or for bad. And so I'm just wondering, you know, in the food scene, does performance have a role?
I don't know anything about the food industry other than that, you know, in terms of theater. Theater is so much about sharing, and the sharing something special. And in the best of worlds, one would think that the food industry is about sharing something special with somebody else. And, you know, whether it's just feeding them or entertaining them or giving them a variety of experiences that they didn't have before, theater is a wonderful way of communing with everybody. And that immediacy of that live theater experience where somebody's just a few feet away from you and they're talking about something that will resonate with you and that you'll think about later. And I think that happens in this piece. And I think obviously in probably some of the cooking shows and in certainly the restaurants, there's something about the immediacy of seeing the chef cooking right there and the and the steam coming up and the plates being manipulated and the you know, everything going on, that's really kind of exciting and alive and special. And I think that anybody coming to see food acts will appreciate that as well.
No dish is ever exactly like any other dish. I mean, there's this planning to it, and yet there's always an element of improvisation and chance, and that's what makes familiar dishes so delightful and exciting. And if you go to a great restaurant, I don't know that it's any different than going to a great piece of theater or a great hearing a great piece of music. It does something for your soul to have these wonderful flavors and the care that has gone into, the personal care that has gone into it from the makers of the food. And it leaves you feeling, I think, the way that great art leaves you, feeling that you've been taken apart and put back together again in a wonderful way, and you're literally nourished, but spiritually as well as physically.
Oh, that's beautiful. What a wonderful way to close out our conversation. That's just, thank you. Mark and Barbara.
Anytime.
I see you came prepared. Well, Mark and Barbara, thank you so very much for coming on and chatting with us about Food Acts. It sounds like you've got something really special ahead of you. I've got my tickets, and I'm really excited to come see you guys. Please let our audience know again where they can see Food Acts and how to find out more information about that.
Food Acts, and it's spelled food and A-C-T-S, not axe like an axe to chop a tree. Food Acts. It runs at the Lion Theater on Theater Row, which is 410 West 42nd Street in Manhattan. It runs February 6th to 24th. There are 16 performances, Wednesday through Saturday at 8, Saturday at 2 p.m. also, and Sundays at 3 p.m. Just double check with the Lion Theater, or we have a website, which is www.foodacts.com, and we look forward to serving up a wonderful show to you.
Well, thank you so very much again. I really loved having y'all.
Thank you.
We enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.